In the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives. Amen. Today we're reading the story of three kings, the story of three wise men, the story of three magi, whatever they are. It comes from the book of Matthew. And Matthew's version of Christmas is a little bit different than Luke's version of Christmas. And usually we're familiar with Luke's version, right? So, you know, the angel comes to Mary and announces there's the Annunciation, and Mary sings the Magnificat. And then there's, you know, Mary and Joseph going, Quirinius is governor of Syria, and they're going to Bethlehem and for the census, and they're in a stable, and there's a manger, and then there's shepherds and angels, and we just celebrated Luke's version of Christmas. You know, a week and a half ago, or last week, you know, and it's not too long ago. That it was 12 days ago, actually, or 11 days ago that we celebrated Luke's version. Matthew, we're entering into the year of Matthew, right? So for this year, we'll be reading texts from Matthew in as the gospel text. And so, you know, Matthew tells a different kind of story. I mean, it's not an incompatible story. It's not, you know, it's not the two stories can't exist side by side, but it's different. Matthew begins with a genealogy. Right? He begins, you know, this is the story of Jesus Christ, you know, and he starts with Abraham, and he says, Abraham, you know, gave birth to Isaac, and Isaac gave birth to Jacob, and Jacob gave birth to, you know, and there's this list, and, you know, Zerubbabel gave birth to Zadok, and Zadok gave birth to Jehoshaphat, right? And there's all these male names that go all the way down to Jesus that, you know, when it is ever read, it's never read in church, but if you do read it on your own, your mind glazes over because it just feels very boring, right? All these names that you can't pronounce. That are being read over and over and over again. So we miss actually what's really curious about it, because Matthew is starting out with a genealogy, and there's all these male names, and then all of a sudden, he says Ruth. And then a little later, he says Bathsheba. And then a little later, he says Tamar and Rahab. And if you're a good Jewish listener, you're like, what? Why are there women's names in this genealogy? And then when you think about the stories of those women, actually you find out that actually a couple of those women are Jews. They're actually Gentiles. And when you hear about the stories, and a lot of several of those women, also the begatting of children came in you know, what would have been unusual ways. Rahab was a prostitute. Tamar played the role of a prostitute so that she could find, as a widow, Tamar was a widow who had to play the role of the prostitute so she could finally get a child with her father-in-law, which is how they did it back in the day. Or it should have, I mean, there's a whole story there in Genesis 38 that I can't get into, but it's weird and it's quirky and it's worth reading if you want to sit down sometime. But anyway, here she is, right? Here's this woman who played the role of a prostitute to get a kid in Jesus' lineage. Here's Bathsheba. Who is in some sense a victim of David's lust, and there is an adulterous relationship that resulted in a child. Wow. Like, what is that doing in Jesus' lineage? All these stories of, you know, these stories of, you know, if you're paying attention in the book of Matthew, you're like, something's going on here. Something different is happening here. What's happening here? And then the story goes right into Joseph. And how Joseph is betrothed to this young virgin, and she gets pregnant, and it's not his child. And he doesn't want to shame her, so he decides to divorce her, quietly. Right? We talked about that a couple weeks ago. That's Matthew's Christmas story. And then Joseph has a dream, and there's an angel that talks to Joseph and says, no, don't divorce her. God is up to something here. God is in the mix. A virgin shall bear a child, and you shall call him Emmanuel. There's this old prophecy in Isaiah. And so Joseph doesn't divorce her, and he stays with her, and Mary is with child, and she gives birth. That's Matthew's version of the Christmas story. I mean, seriously, that's it. I mean, all this other stuff that we did on Christmas isn't there. That's Matthew's version of the Christmas story. And then we get to today's reading, which happens after Christmas. Right? And it's the coming of, you know, what we have traditionally thought is the three kings, and we've given them names. Like, and I can't even think of them right now, but Caspar and Melchior and Balthazar, I think, is right. There's these three kings, which we came up with in the Middle Ages, and we decided they were kings, probably based on, you know, the Isaiah reading that we read that talks about kings. But the word doesn't say kings. The word doesn't even say wise men, which is what our text read. We think of them as wise men. The word in Greek is magi. And magi were known to be kind of these priests from Zoroastrianism. Zoroastrianism is the religion of Persia. So it's in the East, and they study the stars, and I don't even fully understand Zoroastrianism, but there's this dualism about good fighting evil, and they're always in tension with each other, and there's a heaven and a hell, and there's free will, and there's gender parity in Zoroastrianism, interestingly enough, in the ancient world. So men are equal to women. So these three priests, and well, actually three, see, we don't even know if there's three. Matthew doesn't say there were three. Matthew says there were three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Tradition has held that there's three, but we don't know how many there were. Could have been three, could have been seven, could have been 12. That's what the Eastern Orthodox believe, that there were 12 of them. But the story is, these strangers, these Gentiles, these people who are foreign to Judaism, like who know nothing about Judaism, who have weird practices and ways that Jews don't do. I mean, they're astrologers. They're looking up into the sky, and they see something in the sky that tells them that something has happened, that prompts them to make a very long journey, bearing gifts fit for a king, because whatever it is they see in the sky tells them, no, actually, a king has been born. And so they show up in Jerusalem because they need to talk to the current king to kind of get what's going on. And when Herod hears, receives them, Jerusalem is in an uproar. They're afraid. They're terrified. Because Herod, he's the king, but he's not really a legitimate king. Herod's not Jewish. I mean, his family was Edomite. They kind of converted to Judaism, but they're not Jews. They weren't Jewish by blood. Herod's father was appointed by the Roman governor in order to be a leader among the people, but he was a Roman appointee. He wasn't a natural leader, and Herod just kind of inherited that. And so Herod hears there's this king that's been born, and he consults his own wise men, and the wise man says, yes, there will be a king of the Jews that will be born, and he will be born in Bethlehem. And Herod is terrified, which is what leaders do when they feel insecure. They're afraid. I mean, they feel afraid. They feel insecure. Like Herod is a leader who's he's not a leader leading out of justice. He's not a leader leading out of righteousness. He leads from fear. And his grasp on power, his desire to control power. And so he says to the wise men, well, when did you see this star? And why don't you go find him so that I might worship him? Which is, of course, not what Herod wants to do. He wants to destroy this threat to his power. So the wise men go, and they continue to look at their star, and their star somehow leads them to Bethlehem, and there they find Jesus, and they offer him these gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, which are gifts that are totally inappropriate for a baby boy. Right? They're fit for a king, but and I don't know what Joseph, Mary, and Jesus does with gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Text doesn't tell us, but the text says that these three potentially Zoroastrian priests, these three magi anyway, bow down and worship. The NRSV says pay homage, but actually the Greek is, it says worship, that they are worshiping, which is a curious thing for Zoroastrian priests to be doing. And it's a curious thing to throw in as a detail in a story. And that's what happens. And then they have a sense that, no, they actually don't need to go back on the road to Jerusalem. They need to choose a different road. The road back to the kind of power that Herod embodied was not the road they needed to travel down. And so they choose a different road. and they disappear. We don't hear about them again. Like, we don't know. Whatever this meant, they were strangers who just showed up, they do this thing, then they disappear, we never hear about them. Apparently they go back to Persia or Arabia or wherever, do something. And that's where today's story ends. But that's actually not where Matthew's Christmas story ends. Because Herod, when the Magi, anyway, don't come back, Herod gets upset, and he orders that all the baby boys in Bethlehem be under 2 years old be killed. Slaughtered. That's what happens when you lead from fear. It's what insecure leaders do. They take actions that grasp at power that end up hurting innocent people. God warns Joseph in a dream to go down to Egypt before this happens, and he takes Mary and Jesus down to Egypt, and they stay there until Herod is dead. And then his brother comes into power, and they decide, no, we're not going to live in Bethlehem anymore. Let's go up to Nazareth. And that's Matthew's story. Boom. And then you move right into John the Baptist and Jesus' baptism, and we'll do that next week. That's chapter 3, right? I've just given you the synopsis of chapter 1 and 2. We'll do chapter 3 next week. That's the way it is. I'm like, what do we do with this? Like, what do we do with this story? What I like about Matthew's telling of this Christmas story is it's complicated and it's dark. And it deals with the darkness of the world. It deals with, you know, kind of the difficulty of human relationships. It actually deals with the difficulty of human sexuality from the very start. We don't talk about that in church very often. But that's what's going on in Matthew chapter 1. It's the challenges of human sexuality and human sexual relationships. How does that play out, you know, in the coming of Jesus? And then it's about the difficulties of power and the abuse of power. And the assertion is that somehow, you know, that there is something that is happening here. There's a breaking in of light in the darkness. We read this Isaiah passage, "Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has dawned upon you." And this is another thing. We don't read chapter 50, that's chapter 60. We don't read chapter 59 and 58, where it's all doom and gloom. It's all about darkness and waiting, and there's no light. And we don't read those chapters because, like, we don't want to sit here and listen to doom and gloom chapters. We want to hear about the light. But the reality is that there was doom and gloom. And the people sat in darkness and were waiting for light. And then the light came, and it was glorious. I mean, that's the story, but it's about being, but you can't feel the joy and the glory of it without understanding the doom and gloom. And what does it mean for Jesus to be a king? This different paradigm of how to be in the world, of justice in the world, of leadership in the world, of kingdomness in the world, in contrast to a king who actually slaughters innocent children. We need that story, which is why I want to talk about it today. We need that story because we live in a world where we have leaders who are insecure and afraid. The president of Syria is insecure and afraid and has created havoc and refugees in his bid to maintain power. The king of Saudi Arabia slaughters journalists, has them cut up in an embassy in Turkey because he's afraid of their critique. The president of Israel is now hanging on to power at all costs because he's afraid of losing it. And the president of the United States is starting a war. And he's a man who is afraid and insecure of losing power. This is a dark world, right? We're surrounded by leaders who are leading like Herod, and innocent people will suffer.
We're called to be people of God in the midst of this. We're called to be light shining in the darkness. We're called to have hope in the face of these things. And we're called to people who have a different kind of vision than that vision of leading from fear and insecurity. We're called to people who actually believe that justice is a good thing, that righteousness is a good thing, that God actually cares about the poor and the needy. And what we're doing in the MAP program right now is one way we model that. That there actually is hope for those who are kind of marginalized and on the margins, right? That we there are people who will provide shelter and food and care. We're called to be, you know, people who, in the midst of looking in the darkness, can actually see the stars. Can see the stars that shine in the midst of the darkness, can see the light that is actually there. And be people of light, right? Who can read those stars and have hope that there is actually a different way and who live that out. Amen.